Everyone. I'm Wally Eastland. I'm a principal consultant with Microsoft. And I've got Bill Rue, who's the former CIO from Hassel here. We're going to talk about a topic called It's Really Cloudy, So Now What Do We Do? And I just want to make sure everybody is aware, before we go too far into this, that this is, we're going to talk about the cloud, but we're not going to go into a lot of deep technical aspects of the cloud. We're going to talk more about how you integrate the cloud with your business in a way that's meaningful and valuable and achieve some business outcomes. So just to be very upfront about that. So the agenda, we're going to talk about new technologies and trends in IT and sort of the impact that they're having on IT organizations in terms of how they manage those and continue to achieve business outcomes while delivering quality services. We'll go through some high-level discussions about cloud definitions, risks, and benefits. Then we'll talk about a business outcomes approach to implementing new technologies like the cloud and other things. Part of that will be a discussion of what Bill and his team have done at Hassel. We've been working with Bill for several years now, and the approach that they've taken has been a very business-focused approach of ensuring that the IT organization at Hassel, which is a design firm, architectural design firm, is very focused on providing quality design technology and services to Hassel's designers. And Bill will talk at depth about that and sort of how he got to that point. Because he started out at a place where a lot of organizations start out, and that's very focused on delivering technology. And now they're very focused on delivering business services. And then we'll get to a point where we've hopefully cleared some things up and talk about some next steps. So that's the plan for the night, for the day. So it's pretty foggy. It's lots of discussion, lots of hype about cloud technology and all the various as a services. And you couple that with discussions around things like, has anybody heard the acronym BYOD, bring your own device? So how do you support something like having your people bring in whatever device they choose to bring in and being able to connect to the corporate network and do work? So those are the kinds of things that are making IT pretty interesting right now. Interesting either in a good way or a bad way. We'll see. So it's a little foggy. Part of that's because over the last 10 years, there's been a huge, huge increase in the amount of technology that an IT organization has to deal with. So some of those things include virtualization, tablets, smartphones, green IT. All these things are things that people have to be thinking about now, beyond just the delivery of basic infrastructure. We've also got the cloud, all the various aspects of the cloud. Software as a service, platform as a service, infrastructure as a service. And there's a new one, relatively new, called business process as a service. So how do you look at all of those and figure out what it is that's going to be best for your business in terms of achieving some outcomes? And then finally, you've got a situation right now where there are three generations working in most organizations. You've got baby boomers, you've got Gen X, and you've got Gen Y. And all three of those generations have different expectations. They all have different understandings of technology, and they all have different demands. And how do you cater for all of those in a way that you're able to actually continue to achieve business outcomes? So we're going to talk as we go through that. Now, what is the cloud? Before I go into as I said, relatively high-level discussion of the definition of the cloud, I want to ask a question. How many of you have outsourcing as part of your delivery within your IT organizations? So a fair number. Is delivering cloud services fundamentally any different than any other outsourcing or hosting agreement? I mean, there are a lot of differences in terms of the capabilities that you can provide through a cloud-based service. But at the base level, is it really any different than outsourcing? It's just another kind of outsourcing. So keep that in mind as we go, because the thing about outsourcing is in many cases, outsourcing is an activity that a lot of businesses enter into not necessarily for the right reasons. Often it's cost-driven. Sometimes it's I just don't want to deal with it-driven. But a lot of organizations don't take the next step and think about the impact on the business and what outcomes they're going to achieve that are better for the business. What value, what part of the value chain the outsourcing aspect goes into. So, cloud definitions. This is the definition that has come out of the U.S. It's the National Institute for Standards and Technology. I'm not going to read it. You guys can read it. But I'll just ask, just a show of hands, does everybody generally agree with that? Is that your understanding of what the cloud is? Yeah, okay. Just some highlights. On-demand access to a shared pool of configurable computing resources, rapidly provisioned and released with minimum management. So you basically go out and say, I want that. And you have a conversation about how you get it, and there it is. It's a subscription model very often. There we go. So, aspects of the cloud. We have various things, all of them as a service. Software as a service is effectively you go on a browser and you access an application. Just like accessing an application on your desktop, it's just a browser. Platform as a service. You have access to a solution or application development over the cloud, and all of the aspects of that activity happen in a cloud-based environment. Infrastructure as a service is effectively moving computing resources to another provider. It's very elastic. It's very expandable. It's you can theoretically, assuming that the organization that's providing that service is doing it right, you can expand or contract capacity pretty well on demand, and you don't have to manage it yourself. And then finally, business process as a service. So this is an aspect of the cloud that I've just been hearing recently, and it's all about taking a full business process that you may have functioning in your organization, finding a provider who can take that on and add value to it and host it. So again, it's very much like a hosting environment, but it's effectively saying the entire business process is running in your environment, we're just going to access it. We expect you to manage it. So there are various kinds of cloud, which is also quite interesting. Public cloud is what everybody thinks of traditionally as the cloud. It's a subscription-based service. It's a many-to-many sort of service. Everybody can have access to it. And it's totally managed off-site, and it's for a number of organizations. And then there's a private cloud. And this can be either external or internal to an organization, but the real differentiator here is the fact that it is a infrastructure environment that is solely intended for a single organization. So you have complete control over what goes into it, but it may be managed either externally, internally, or even partially both ways. And then there's the hybrid cloud, which may include part of a public cloud and part of a private cloud. So you get into more complexity when you start thinking about that. But all of these offer a lot of opportunity to gain some economies of scale, gain the ability to elastically manage activity without taking on a lot of overhead. But there are some risks. So there was a study done by Gartner a couple of years ago of a large group of IT and business people, and they asked, what are the risks to the cloud? The number one risk that came back was security and privacy at that point in time. But running close second were performance, regulatory compliance, and immaturity. Immaturity of the offerings, immaturity of the organizations providing the services. And that's a really interesting one because over the last several years, and in fact even in the last few months, there have been some fairly big failures of cloud-based services by some fairly large, theoretically mature companies. Companies like VMware and Google and Microsoft and Amazon. And most of these are business continuity, service continuity, disaster recovery related. Most of them are because of power issues in most cases. But anywhere from hours to, in some cases, days, these services weren't available. So if you're depending on these services as critical business services, and you have no control over them other than the fact that you've got a contractual agreement, but you're still held accountable for the delivery of them into your organization, how do you get a level of comfort and a level of confidence that they are going to be available when you want them to be available? And that's the immaturity piece. And I think it's getting better, but it's still there. It's definitely something that should be considered as part of the consideration of moving services to the cloud, and it's definitely something that should be considered in terms of making choices about cloud providers. Now, there are risks, but there are also benefits. So there was an IDC survey recently that came back with the top three benefits. The top three benefits: number one, lower costs, lower capital costs, lower staff costs, just lower costs in general. Ease of deployment. Again, theoretically, as you grow, you call up and say, I need more, and you get more. It's very simple. And then finally, standardization. Now, standardization is something that I think a lot of people expect from the cloud as it matures. I don't think in some cases it's here yet, but it is seen as a benefit. And all these are really good benefits, especially in terms of IT and technology delivery. But do they actually deliver or automatically deliver business outcomes? They may, but not necessarily. So how do you then go from what we had before, which is very cloudy, to still pretty hazy, to the idea that whatever we do in IT, it's ultimately to deliver a business outcome to the organization that we work in? And it's very interesting because often I hear IT refer to the business colleagues that they have in their organization as customers. And I find that interesting because if I were to go and talk to a salesperson or a manufacturing person or any other person in an organization and I ask them who their customers are, they would tell me my external customer A, B, C, D. So why does IT refer to their business colleagues in the same organization as customers? It almost sets up a separation between IT and the rest of that organization. And the real point here ought to be that everybody's in it to deliver business outcomes externally. So there's a very good book called The Real Business of IT. And one of the aspects of that book is that the number one rule is it's not about IT. It's about business outcomes and performance. So that's the book. It's referenced in the end of the deck. So the thing to think about is IT is part of the business and participates in achieving business outcomes. And when we're thinking about bringing in new services, whether they're cloud-based or traditional services and technologies, it really ought to be about IT providing an outcome to the business through the delivery of technology. So that's really what Bill has done over the last several years, and I'm going to pass it over to Bill. Bill's a former CIO from Hassel, which is a design firm, and he'll tell you all about Hassel.
Thanks, Wally. Sorry about that. So, okay, it's a little bit washed out, but to give you a little bit of an idea of scale, it's a picture of the world. You've got, obviously can read the cities a little bit easier, but to give you an idea, Hassel is a design and planning firm. We've roughly 1,000-odd people. And when I say 1,000-odd, the reason I say 1,000-odd is we typically work in technology in a couple of different metrics. So one of the main ones that we have to deal with is about our people. So we have whole issues around capacity, whether we've got enough machines, what the software is. But if you don't know what you're measuring, one of the hardest things to do is actually know what you need to actually provide for. So within our organisation, we typically talk about two metrics for people. One is the full-time equivalent, which is what we typically look at when you look at costs and where that sits. And in terms of what we do within technology, we actually work on bums on seats. And the reason we do that is if you've got a part-timer who works Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and you've got another part-timer working Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, well, on Wednesday, we've got two people. That doesn't change. So how do we deal with that? So that's the real reason we work with bums on seats. We've got a number of different studios, and this is just basically showing the growth over time. So we started in Adelaide in 1938, moved to Melbourne in 1947, and our most recent studio openings have been in Singapore last year, and most recently in London only a couple of months ago. Some of the challenges that brings for us is, in terms of a design firm, is bringing the whole collaborative nature of what we do, of trying to interpret our clients' intent and what they want in terms of their output, and how do we get the best people on that project regardless of where they are. We've got a number of different languages and we have to support Double Byte and making sure that that collaborative environment works across cultures, not just across the languages themselves. So how do you do that in the most effective way? And one of the real difficult points that we have to deal with is our really good people who might be an expert designer and might be an expert in commercial workplace might be working on a project in, say, for example, in London, but they might live in Brisbane. So how do we make sure that the client gets the best outcome, gets access to the best people at the right time, and that the teams in those locations can access that in the best way as well? We had recently had one where we designed a competition for an airport up in Harbin in the north of China. And one of the design challenges we had to deal with there was a number of months of the year is permafrost. So how do you actually then cater for designing a new airport in an area where you can only build a certain number of months each year, and how to make good design out of that? We've recently won a number of awards for our work, and the most at the World Architecture Awards last year, we won the interior design fit out for the world, which we're quite pleased. This is the ANZ Centre in Melbourne, and what I'll do is just refer to my notes just so I get all the marketing information correct. So just forgive me while I read some of this information. The ANZ Centre houses 6,500 people. It's the first time, or rarely if ever before, that a bank has actually invited people to go into the heart of its workplace. So the idea is that it really wanted to create a permeable public space within the workplace and bring stakeholders in the community into the organisation's heart, creating a lively ground-level hub, including cafes, public art and a visitor centre. So it really demonstrates a bold new direction for a banking institution to try and balance its needs and wants between security and the ability to have that transparency with its, basically, its public. This one here is one of my favourites because I quite like in terms of what they've done here. This is the Alibaba headquarters. And for those of you who don't know who Alibaba are, it's the world's largest online business-to-business trading platform. It was founded by a guy called Jack Ma and 17 other people in 1999, so not that long ago, really. And it claims at the moment that it has more than 65 million registered users, more than 240 countries, and that was at March 31 this year. It's 150,000 square metres of campus, and it has 9,000 employees working in this location. It's based on the concepts of connectivity, clarity and also of community, bringing a workplace where you'd be happy to come and work at. It has hubs, internal and external streets, bridges, roof terraces and strategically placed destination points to all help contribute to that collaborative nature of what they do within the workplace. Now the other thing which I quite like about it is you'll notice that these patterns in terms of the facade there, that's all to do with the Hangzhou context and where it's located. And it's been embraced with these garden networks and lattices. And these sunshading screens are actually quite prominent in the historical gardens within Hangzhou. So trying to bring that into the workplace and link it back into the where they're actually trying to work in that collaborative nature. This is probably a little bit closer to home. This is the Eco-Sciences Precinct, which we refer to as KBRB. For those of you familiar with the old Boggo Road jail site, just out of shot, funnily enough, because you know they wanted to focus on the building, is the old historical jail precinct there. But in terms of what they had to do within this building here, is they had to try and bring 1,000 scientists and 6 different CSIRO divisions into a single collaborative research environment. The project achieved significant innovation in creating a new facility without walls. So the idea is that you can link the inside and outside through this linkage process, encouraging both knowledge exchange and discovery through the shared spaces and resources. Now, obviously located in a city with around 300 days of sunshine each year, A solar control system was developed to effectively work within that, those boundaries, I guess, of trying to make sure that the building works effectively, and then also reduce that thermal load away from the building itself, making it comfortable to work both inside, and that outside space there, even though it looks like it's a little bit enclosed, is actually quite open there. 140 William Street in Perth is one of the a significant influential projects within Perth. This is actually the main mall within Perth, if those of you are familiar with it. And it also created a linkage back into new life within that retail precinct. It's actually on top of the railway, so it's a bit hard to see here, but these are the actual escalators down to the underground railway system. So putting a commercial building on top of the railway and also creating some of the retail and commercial spaces that link it right back into the mall space as well. So this is the other slot in terms of the linkage into the pedestrian mall. Now, one of the things that we're quite proud of in terms of this building is it created new standards for tenant comfort and social responsibilities. It's also the largest building in Western Australia to get a Green Star 5-star rating, not only for in terms of the design, but also the as-built, which from a design perspective, it's one thing to design for a 5-star, but once it actually gets built, it's another thing to be then rated again afterwards. Why is all that important? And some of those images that you saw there, some of them are actually photographs, and some of them are actually in terms of what we call our renderings. So we'll create those images to try and link what we're trying to do for the client, the design, back to what we're doing with it, what we do with technology. So what is it that we do with technology, and what are some of the challenges that we face? And for us, technology is all about supporting the design outcomes. And the reason I show you those slides there, even though I'm not an architect or an interior designer, is that is what we do as a business. So within technology, we are helping them create those images to make sure the client can connect to it, understand what they're getting, or to make sure that we actually got the brief right. And how do we do that? How do we make sure we've got the right tools to allow us to achieve those outcomes? How do we make sure the documentation capability and the delivery of that documentation? And documentation for us isn't about Word, Excel. For us, documentation is about those images, those fly-throughs, the little movies that show you what it might look like as you go through the building before it's built. And also, very importantly, the design documentation that might end up going to the contractors in which they estimate and then build off directly. We've always got an increased need for speed and storage, and I don't think I've met any organisation that always wants the next fastest machine or I need more storage for whatever industry you might be working within. And then the increasing software capability. So for Hassel at the moment, we're going through a transition where we're moving from our traditional 2D to a 3D or building information modelling tool set, and then we're now moving towards a 4D, 5D and 6D context as well. And what does that mean in terms of linking all that information as the data sets get bigger back into those models? We can't ignore compliance and risk management, and we've got some unique requirements in some of our regions in terms of that compliance element. And compliance isn't always just about have we got enough software, but have we made sure that we've got the right information stored in the right jurisdictions so we can actually be compliant in that location. Multi-location, multi-discipline and multilingual we've talked about, but it really is about that cross-pollination and that collaborative nature, and how do we actually bring all that together as a cohesive whole to the benefit for the client. So this is an example, and this was actually an example we had here in our Brisbane studio, that in 1 month we had a number of projects, and we are a project organisation, we're based on our projects, and sometimes for reasons outside of our own control, projects may slip or they may stop and they may start. And we had an example of a perfect storm where we had a number of projects start up and a couple of new projects start at the same time. So we had to deal with basically a growth in this location, in the Brisbane location, which in 1 month we had to deal with 50% more capacity, 50% more machines, we had to order the software, and they needed to start within a week. And trying to get all that working, and how do we deal with that? At the same time, in the other studios, we're experiencing the same sort of issues. So at a very top level, I mean, some of the simple questions that I work with the team are, how is it going to help with our design and reputation? We are a design firm, so if it's not going to help And if this piece of technology isn't going to help with our design, how's it going to help with our reputation? How's it going to help with our profit and loss? And in essence, how is it going to help our people do their job better to deliver a better quality product? Because if it's not doing one of those things, then why are you talking to me about it? And how does it then fit? We're a relatively small team. How does it then fit in terms of what we can deal with so we don't bite off more than we can chew? Or if we want to take on something that's bigger than what we can deal with, how are we going to structure or partner with other organisations to make that work? So if we're going to partner with another organisation, they need to really understand how they add value to us, to our clients, because if they're not adding value, then why are we using them? So for us, it's getting a little bit less cloudy, so to speak. And really, for me, the use of the cloud, or the terminology of the cloud, and I think Wally was right, you know, is it any different to any of the other processes we go to when we evaluate a service or a piece of technology? For me, not really. We still need to go through the whole risk management process. We still need to understand what value it's actually going to add to us. And are we just doing it because everyone else is doing it? Well, to me, that's really not a good answer. How is it actually going to help us do what we need to do? So our cloud is based on focusing on the design. And I heard, and I recently attended a service management forum as well, and I heard a lot of discussion about reducing costs and I'm able to do this and I'm able to do that. But one of the things for us is really focusing on how does it help us do better design? How does it allow us to use our design tools more effectively, get burst capacity that when we need to, we don't have to try and shuffle machinery around or people around or wherever it may be, but making sure that we've got those tools and processes in place that can support that. It is an element of the cost is there, of course. I mean, you've got to weigh it up. There's a cost performance process you need to go through to make sure it works. But the main thing for me is that, and what we've done in terms of our testing is we don't think it's there yet. So we do use parts of the public cloud for certain elements. We do have a private cloud component that we use for other elements. And then we use our own internal cloud services, which we provide to our different studios or within a studio, to actually then bolster up that along with traditional technology. The reason for that is, and most of it is around the interoperability and how does it work and how do you transfer and make sure that you can ramp up and ramp down. And very importantly, how do you make sure that you deal with those compliance pieces as well? So the most important thing is to test and validate. So it doesn't matter which version of the cloud you want to try and use, you go through that and make sure you know before you start, why are you doing it? Which pieces do you think will work? And you might find that as you go through, your assumptions might change because you're now dealing with true data as it comes back to you. So that increased capability is the greatest use for us. But the business as usual, that costs and that costs intelligently, for us, we try and break down all of our costs back to that project. So if we can now give our project managers or our team leaders the capability to know that if they sign up for a package of technology, it's going to cost that project a certain amount for the duration of that project. But if they get to a point where they need some additional capacity or burst capacity, as we talk about it, then we can do that. But you need to make sure that you've got those processes in place that you can actually stand behind it and know that it's going to work. And that's really where that test and validation comes in. So how did we get there? And I guess this also comes back to the work that we did with Wally and his team a couple of years ago. And for us, the important part was talking about how do we teach our people within the technology group what it is we do and how do we get there. So to start with, several years ago, we had an issue where we were going through a whole series of pain points where the business wasn't really giving the feedback back to me that I was expecting. It wasn't a discussion about, well, how can we work with this on the business or how can we get access to this piece of technology. It was even down to the more granular level of why can't I have this piece of software? Why does it take so long to get this organised? I haven't received a call back from this job that I logged XYZ time ago. So and we went through an analysis of what was occurring and we found that there was no sharing or management of knowledge within the team. And as you go into the cloud, this is going to become increasingly important, because if you don't know how these things work and the team don't understand why you use them, then how can you get value out of them? So you need to make sure that you can't ignore the traditional skills that we have around documentation and process. We also found that some people were repeating their roles and other people just simply weren't sharing it or keeping it to themselves. And we had a number of individuals who believed that their value to the organisation was that they had the information, and if they had the information, they didn't necessarily want to share it with other people. So we researched and benchmarked other similar firms. Now, within the design industry, that's quite a difficult task, because we'll tell you so much, but we're not going to tell you everything, because then you'll know what I know, and that's not a very good thing. We also then sought industry benchmarks and from independent analysts, and we within the what we call the AEC industry, it was heavily skewed towards the engineering firms and construction firms, because they tend to be a lot larger organisations, whereas we wanted to know more about design firms. We're lucky enough that we've got an organisation of very talented and educated people with great ideas. So we asked them, okay, what do you think we do well? What do you think we do poorly? How do you think we could do better? What do you think we could put in place to make it easier for you to do your job better? We went and looked at specialists and brought specialists in, such as Wally's and his team, to say, well, this is your area of expertise. You tell us, based on what you know, whether we're doing the right thing or not. Are there gaps there that you can see that we're not doing? And then we looked at, well, what do we want to do next? And then we looked not only at ourselves, but also in our partners and our vendors. Now, for me, I make a very important distinction between a partner and a vendor. A vendor is someone I buy stuff off. I'll send them a purchase order. The contract of sale for me is it turns up and it's what we've put the purchase order in for. A partner is adding value to my team, my organisation, and ultimately to our customer, because it's no longer about I'm just providing this piece. You're actually part of a value chain to the client. And if they don't understand that, then how can they truly be a partner? So there's a whole set of expectations and a discussion that needs to go on as part of that process. We really wanted to look at not managing IT for IT's sake, which was actually one of the quotes that I got back from some of our senior management. You guys are just looking after IT, just playing with IT, not understanding what we're doing as a business. So we needed to understand what it is we do as a business and focus on that and why we do it. And a part of that was looking at, we wanted increased flexibility, we wanted speed, but we couldn't risk performance, we couldn't risk compliance. So flexibility, capability, and technology for the design business. So we looked at a number of different options, and at that time we looked at, okay, do we keep what we're doing now? If it's not broken, some of the arguments are, if it's not broken, why do we need to fix it? If it is broken, what are the options you can put in place to actually make that work more effectively? But it had to come back to that aspiration of flexibility for the design business. At the end of the day, we went through a number of different options. We looked at from staying where we were right through to outsourcing everything, including my role. And that was actually one of the options I put forward, was even my role could be outsourced if they wanted to do that. The board came back and said, no, we don't want to do that. Based on what we know about our business, everything else we could essentially look at partners or some of the other value models that we could do, came back to, we couldn't find people who could look after our design tools. And considering we're a design business, it's a critical piece of what we do as an organisation. So our focus is really around the design tools, or the tools that create what it is for delivery of design. We also then increased our capability. So prior to this change, we had people in one location which were simply 9 to 5. If you had a problem in a different studio, well, good luck, because they didn't know how to fix it, or they didn't have the skills or permissions to be able to do so. So we changed the model to say, well, how do we make this work across the entire organisation in a seamless way? So we introduced effectively a 24/7 support for design and delivery activities, backed up with partners who could provide technical expertise. And then we go through the continual service improvement process. Wherever we find something that's causing a problem, how can we change that to make it more effective? So we went through the process, and it was quite a rapid deployment that we went through. We effectively put this whole change through, and to give you an idea of scale, every role except my own changed in some way within the technology group. And that occurred within a week. And because of the range and scale of what occurred, it was quite a tricky process to put in place all the different security models and not impact the business. So communication was a key component of why this was occurring, because people in different studios, if they weren't involved in the discussions to get to this point, this is now landing in their lap and going, why are you doing this? And then looking at how you can actually provide that value back to the organisation moving forward. How's it actually, what's in it for me? Whether you're a design draftsman using AutoCAD or Revit or whatever the tool may be, right through to the managing principal of a studio, what's in it for me? How is this change going to help me do what I do better? And why do you think it's going to work? And how are you going to prove it to me? This slide is just basically an evolution. It started from a simple four-block slide which talked about design tools. It talked about office automation, say Word, Excel, and a couple of other pieces on there. But it was a very simple blocky diagram. Now, I still use this with our senior management today because essentially the only two bits that they're even interested in talking about are those two in red. Everything else just makes it work. So where are we within the organisation to help that make it work? What are we doing to help that red bit work so we don't have as many on the left-hand side calling in? Or if they are calling in, we're adding value to help them create a better design. So one of the real outcomes for me was I was no longer having discussions about what's broken. It changed to a discussion about, and the really pleasing things about the Singapore studio and the London studio was it was no longer a discussion about, well, I want this computer, I want that computer. It was more about, well, this is what we're trying to do in the next 3 months. This is the business plan for 6 months, 12 months, 3 years. This is where we want to get to. What do you think we should put in place to make that work? What are the things we should be thinking about now that if we put it in place now, that in 6 months or 12 months, we're not going to get bitten on the bum? That we already know that that's there and that you've actually taken that into account because you're actually being involved in the discussion a lot earlier. We've been involved in the discussion around building information modelling and they're asking us to say, well, can you run these tests to give us more information on how we can collaborate better? What are the tools that we're looking at to make this work more effectively? And that's really where the cloud piece fits in really well. For me, the cloud isn't just about another bit of technology sitting off there on the side and that's going to reduce our costs. Reducing costs is great if that's an outcome, but if I can improve our design and reputation, that may be a greater outcome to offset whatever costs it might be there. If it gives us more flexibility and agility to deliver, if it gives us a better collaboration platform to work from. So it's a change in focus from from a technology perspective, I've got green IT, I've got this, I've got that, I've got virtualization. That's great, but how do you bring all of that together to actually deliver value back to the organisation? So today it continues to evolve, and part of that evolution is myself, of course. But we've now gone through a process where even with my own role, I was heavily involved with the board and with my successor to actually say, well, what are we trying to do? Where do we want to go, and why? What sort of individual do we want to bring in to try and move it to that next level of where they want to head towards? And the better communication, visibility and understanding is the communication piece cannot be understated. It is a constant communication. As people change, as organisations change, as their focus changes, I got taught in one of the courses that you attend many years ago that people don't listen until they're ready to learn. So you could be telling them the same thing year after year and then one day all of a sudden they've got a need and all of a sudden they'll listen. So you've got to continue that communication and be consistent with that communication process throughout that time. We no longer work on break fix. We're now looking at, well, how do we improve the overall process? And it may be that we focus on an individual element, and part of the design ethos is any one of those pieces you could unbolt, take off to the side and put a new piece in there. But how do you do that in the most effective way? And very importantly, trust your people. Train them. Make sure they understand the value that they have. Because if they don't understand the value that they have within your teams, how can they be doing the best they can for your business? If they don't understand what it is your business does and where they fit into that and what whatever they might be doing does for the business, how can they be making sure they get the most for it? So this is the team today. And it's a little bit simpler than what the one we used to have. Whereas in the past it was a lot more complicated in terms of crossovers, who was responsible for what. So we go back to the racing matrix and went through and said, okay, well, who's responsible, who's accountable? So we're very much clear on who is going to be responsible for which elements, who's accountable for them, and making sure that communication flows through the organisation. Thanks, Will.
Thanks, Bill. So, hopefully it's a bit of a more clear blue sky now. The real important thing about what Bill has done and the approach that he's taken is he's really driven behaviors throughout his team, and the behaviors are around ensuring that whatever they do, they're thinking about the outcome. The outcome they're thinking about is what are we going to achieve in order to provide better design to our clients. And that's the client being the client that Hassel is providing the project to. And that's really, really key. And it's evident when I go and I walk around that it's very evident in the people I talk to and what I hear. So talking about business outcomes, how do you ensure that you're linking business outcomes to cloud solutions or any other technology solutions, actually? First of all, they're called cloud services. So whether or not they are really services in a service management or ITIL or Microsoft Operations Framework perspective or not, I'd be happy to have an interesting debate on, because in some cases they are, in some cases they aren't. But if you're providing a service and you're not taking a service-oriented view, probably you should look at that and think about that. You know, are you providing a service? Or are you providing a piece of technology? Try to draw a very clear line, called a value chain, from the new solution or your services through the IT organization, through the business out into the external customer base. Can you see that there is value provided in the services that your organization is providing to your organization's customer base? Also think about, how does it support your enterprise infrastructure or architecture? Do you have a documented infrastructure or architecture? And if you don't, maybe you should think about that. One of the things that Bill's done is he's really driven complexity down to the lowest possible level within his organization. And one of the ways to do that is to start having a conscious architecture and a conscious infrastructure that you're looking at and thinking about and looking for. Where are the complexities? Where are the duplications? How can we make this as simple and clean as possible and still deliver the outcomes that we need to deliver? And then finally, can you articulate the value of any of the services you're providing or any technology or applications you're providing to a non-IT colleague within your organization? And if they don't get it, either you're not communicating it well or there's no value. So give some thought to that. All right. So again, just to recap, IT is really about driving business outcomes. Got a couple of rules associated with that. It's not about IT. It's all about business performance and outcomes, and IT needs to participate. IT can, and this is through cloud, think about green IT, think about anything you want to. The IT organization can be an incredibly powerful strategic aspect of any business. If you come to the table, you understand the business outcomes that your business is trying to deliver, and you bring solutions that the business can go, that's great. Absolutely. That's a way we can address this problem that we've been trying to address and be better at doing whatever it is we're trying to do. So think about that. All right. So we did go to a service management conference a few weeks ago, and they had an action plan as part of their slide deck, so I provided the action plan here. Monday morning, just think about what you're doing, current stuff, possible proposed stuff in terms of technology solutions, and apply rules number one and number two to them. Think about, are they actually delivering tangible business outcomes? And would your colleagues that are not part of IT agree with that? And look at your current outsourcing agreements. Think about who you're working with from an outsourcing perspective. Are they a vendor, in Bill's term, or a partner? And are they part of your value chain? And if they're not part of your value chain, should you be having a very interesting conversation with them about how they need to be providing value to you in order to achieve the outcomes? The next 90 days, start talking to people within the business about what IT does, and whether, you know, what are we doing well, what are we not doing well, how do we get better? Take an improvement view on what you're doing, and take a view of being a part of the business, not providing services to the business. Because frankly, if you're providing services to the business, then you're a service provider, and there could be service providers out there that do it better, faster, cheaper than you. Start looking at new technologies based on value and supporting business outcomes, and continue that dialogue with partners and vendors about how they are supporting or not supporting your organization's business outcomes. And start thinking about how do you engineer your agreements with those vendors or partners in order to achieve that outcome. In the next year, really work on refocusing or enhancing the perception and culture of IT as part of the business and an integral provider to the business. And then finally, make sure you're a vital part of the value chain, and also make sure that your partners and vendors are as well. So there's some additional resources. A lot of the concepts came from the Microsoft Operations Framework, which is on Microsoft.com. Feel free to either contact Bill or I. The book we talked about is there. We're also on LinkedIn. So, thank you. Happy to take questions.